As you've probably heard by now, we've teamed up with BetMGM this season. We'll be using BetMGM lines to make all of our picks, and we'll have special offers for our listeners each week. If you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC, and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager with BetMGM. Here's how it works. Download the BetMGM app and sign up using bonus code THEATHLETIC. Make your first deposit of at least $10, place your first bet on any game, and claim your voucher for a one-year subscription to The Athletic. See BetMGM.com for terms. U.S. promotional offers not available in D.C., Mississippi, New York, Nevada, Ontario, or Puerto Rico. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Available in the U.S. Call 877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY-467-369 in New York. Call 1-800-NEXT-STEP in Arizona. 1-800-327-5050 in Massachusetts. 1-800-BETS-OFF in Iowa. 1-800-270-7117 for confidential help in Michigan. 1-800-981-0023 in Puerto Rico. First bet offer for new customers only in partnership with Kansas Crossing Casino and Hotel. Don't forget, if you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager.
Welcome back, everybody. It's Arthur Staple. You're listening to No Sleep Till Belmont, the Islanders podcast from The Athletic, joined as always by AJ Maletsko. AJ, how are you doing?
I'm good, Arthur. How are you doing today?
Doing all right. Another late night up with the Islanders last night in Game 5, and that was a long, tough night for anybody out there listening. I think we were, like we were saying before we started recording, imagine if we had recorded yesterday, what a different sort of feel we'd have for the podcast. We wouldn't have known what was coming, and what was coming in Game 5 was a lot of pain, and you know, I guess just my first question to you is, you know, we can talk about what we know about the Islanders, but for you as a player, when you get pumped like that in such a big game, how quickly can you recover?
You know, interestingly, I would say that recovering from a game like that is easier than recovering from a heartbreaking one goal overtime, almost there game. And I know they were like Bush and Edzo were talking about that last night during the broadcast. And to me, if you are that close to winning and you just lose in overtime or lose by a goal, it's different. They were terrible last night. Everybody's got bad games. Teams have bad games. You got to flush it. You got to move on. And the fact that they just didn't show up and they got blown out is almost easier to just wipe the slate clean and say, that wasn't us. That's not how we usually play. We had a bad night, bad timing for a bad night. We can all agree on that, especially after such a great showing in Game 4 at the Coliseum with that incredible atmosphere. I say that knowing that there is sort of a confidence thing, right? And Barry Trotz has said in all our media Zooms, he doesn't believe in momentum between playoff games, but there is confidence and there is lack of confidence. But I do believe an 8-0 game when they've been with them in every game so far, and they went to game, you know, 6 games back in the Eastern Conference Finals last year, that I do think this is going to be something that they can just, it's an anomaly. Let's move on. Let's see what we can do back at the Coliseum, back in our barn.
Yeah, and as we sit here recording on Tuesday afternoon, we haven't heard the edict for the tweet from the NHL Department of Player Safety quite yet. From what I understand, as we're going along here, nothing's been decided yet, but I think they're leaning towards the $5,000 fine for Matthew Barzal for his cross-check to the jaw of Jan Rutta. And I think, you know, if Rutta were like very obviously injured, and he didn't play in the third period last night, so you know, that may factor into it. And John Cooper had no update on him today, but that may just be trying to play a little gamesmanship with player safety to see if an injury can kind of tilt a fine into a suspension. I tend to think it's not, you know, even at the moment, I didn't think it was suspension worthy in the regular season. Yes, it would have been. And I think the 5 in a game that Barzal got at the end of the second period for that cross check was well earned. And it was kind of indicative to me of the Islanders didn't play like the Islanders. And I think a few guys kind of thought it was a good time to vent frustration, and it really wasn't. You know, Barry Trotz wants his team to carry themselves in a very professional manner at all times, and it didn't feel like that for maybe that stretch of the second period last night.
Yeah, you know, it's a hard line. I mean, it's a fine line in this terms of having that emotion and having that frustration, well earned when you have a game like that, that of course they're going to be frustrated. Those are athletes. Those are competitors. Those are guys that they want to win and they have won and they've been right there in even games they don't win. So when they're getting blown out from the start of the game, they weren't skating with the Lightning. So I think that emotion as a fan, as a former player, as you know, if I were the coach or something, you look at it, you like that emotion. If they just rolled over and shrugged their shoulders and are like, oh, well, no big deal. I think that's disappointing too, but it's, how do you manage that emotion? How do you channel that emotion? And what do you do now in a game like last night? There's not much you can do. That they were not getting the bounces. Even when they had their flurry of activity, they were hitting posts and they just weren't getting the bounces. So I think that when you look at, the way that they reacted physically, you know, there were some scrums after the whistle. Mayfield got heated. All that stuff to me was sort of okay. I didn't like what Barzal did. To me, it was super undisciplined. You know, you had the Ruta Pageau going on in front of the net, and then Barzal went after him. It was we did have the benefit of the slow-mo replay. A lot of people I know on Twitter were saying it was glove. Well, if you look at it, it was a shaft of the stick,
it was
right,
definitely
to his face.
Not glove. Yeah, no.
It was, and then he jumped on top of him, right? So it was sort of what we saw from Barzal, by the way, at the beginning of this year, not necessarily that specifically, but how many undisciplined penalties he took. So that's not a great trend, but at the same time, the frustration was valid in my sense, my idea, the way I'm looking at it. So, you know, I think that they maybe got it out of their system. That's not the way they should play. That's not Islanders hockey. We've talked about their style of hockey, and that's not it. I think it should just be a fine. And the fact that, you know, he did get kicked out of the game, the fact that Ruta didn't come back, that's a little bit of a gray area, only because they're not releasing anything about the injury. They were up whatever it was at that point, 6-0. So you're not going to push it. If you have a player like that, you're not going to say, well, come back if there's even a question mark. So I know that they take that into account, but that's a little bit dicey. Just knowing that that game was already well in hand for the Tampa Bay Lightning. So, you know, I really have a tough time as a commentator, as a fan, and even as a former player at how you manage your emotions for good. How do you use them to motivate yourself to play, to score goals, be gritty, be tough, and not take dumb penalties? And that's always a tough one.
Yeah. I mean, there were some frustration penalties in the course of the game in that second period after, like you said, they hit three posts, I think, on three consecutive shots to try to get it to 3-1. And when that didn't happen, you could feel, you know, when Nelson takes a hooking penalty, you could kind of feel the air go out of things on the, you know, for the Islanders. And then Clutterbuck hits Palat from behind, not the worst hit we've ever seen. Certainly a penalty, a 2-minute penalty, but clearly frustration. Kyle Palmieri sticks his leg out to trip Blake Coleman. Again, not the dirtiest play you've ever seen, but a 2-minute penalty. So the frustration is leaking out. But I feel like the Barzal one, he is standing up for his teammate, who he knows, I think, is a bit compromised health-wise in Pageau. But I think, you know, throw a cross check in the guy's back as he's skating off, and then you go to your bench to go off the ice for the second period. Everybody can do that. But the kind of the confrontation and then the overzealous one right to the face. It's a little bit of exuberant youth, and it's a guy like Barzal who's not used to those kinds of confrontations, having one and maybe saying like, I don't really, you know, if that's Matt Martin or Cal Clutterbuck, I think they know where the line is. Maybe Matthew Barzal doesn't know how to kind of engage in that kind of physicality because he rarely does it in such an excessive way. But like we said, even if it's a fine, he plays game six. The thing that maybe was the most disturbing to me was throughout the course of this series, the Lightning have had a couple of games, or at least a couple stretches, game one the whole way through, and then this, you know, most of the first and second period really in game four, where they didn't look very good. And the Islanders were really controlling play. They got out to the 3-0 lead in game four, and they kind of controlled a lot of game one. But you see where the Lightning aren't playing their game, the Islanders are, you know, ahead by a goal, a couple of goals, three goals, and then it ends up being a one-goal game, even though it's games the Islanders were clearly better. This one on last night in game five, the Islanders are out of sorts. The Lightning are getting tons of odd man rushes. The Islanders are doing nothing on the forecheck. They're not impeding the Lightning. It seems like they're almost turning the puck over in perfect spots to let them gain through the neutral zone with speed. And it turns into an unbelievable blowout. So that's the worrisome thing to me, is that if the Islanders are off their game, they're not able to really kind of hang around the way that the Lightning did when they're off their game.
Yeah, you know, that's a really interesting point, because you go back to game four, which what an incredible game that was, but ended up being a one goal game, right? And Matt Martin gets the game winner, of course, the night that his brother-in-law gets married. And that was a great story from the for the Esiason family. But you look, you know, they had that incredible second period, which has been the story for the Islanders through this playoffs. Their second periods, for some unknown reason, have been their strongest period. They've been able to produce a lot. And that night, was that Saturday night? I don't know. I can't keep track of the days anymore. But
it was Saturday night, I think.
And these games at 8 o'clock, by the way, no matter win or lose, it's late. I'm like, give me a 7 o'clock game, NBC. But anyway, they have that great second period. And even though it's not that they necessarily took their foot off the gas, maybe they did a tiny bit, but they do come back and Point gets a goal and, you know, of course, Point now 8 straight games with a goal. So that's an incredible story from, you know, if you're just a fan of hockey or if you're a fan of the Lightning. I know that Islanders fans don't want to hear that. And they have that moment where they give up 2 quick goals and suddenly it's a one goal game. Barry Trotz called that timeout and they regained and they were able to lock it down and win that. But, you know, the fact that to me, that's a little bit of the experience that Tampa Bay has. And a lot of it is the depth that they have. And I know we've talked at length about the good depth the Islanders have. It's a little different though. When you have Tyler Johnson on the fourth line, I mean, and he was probably the playoff MVP for their team back in 2015. It's a different kind of depth when you have people like that scoring goals and, you know, Pat Maroon's on their second power play unit and, you know, it's just it's an interesting concept that when they aren't playing, quote unquote, their best game, and I know according to Coop, they didn't, but that of course ticked off Islanders fans because they didn't give the Islanders any credit, but he didn't like their game on Saturday night and they still made it a one goal game. So it is a little worrisome. I still think that the Islanders, if they can get a lead, they can lock it down. And, you know, I think I was interested that Barry pulled Varlamov. I didn't think any of them were really soft goals. And I think that's a tough place for Sorokin to go in. I think it's a wash. It's an anomaly. Not a wash. That's the wrong word. It's an anomaly. You just got to get rid of it, move on, and see if you could jump out to a quick lead like they've done before and withstand the pressure that you know the Tampa Bay Lightning are going to put on you, whether it's in the second or the third period. They don't give up. They have sort of a surgical precision about the way that they go about their games. And the Islanders have proven that they can handle that. It's just not the same as the way the Tampa Bay Lightning can handle their leads.
Looking for an assist with your credit card but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 U.S.-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard that right. You can talk to a real human in customer service anytime. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask us. Make the right call and get the service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard.
Looking for an assist with your credit card but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 US-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard that right. You can talk to a real human in customer service at any time. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask us. Make the right call and get the service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard.
Now, again, from your playing days, AJ, we have to talk about Ryan Pulock's play at the end of game four.
Oh, good. Let's talk about game four. It's way more fun to talk about game four anyway.
Exactly. Sorry we started with the bad news, fans. But that was the most recent one. But we're going to go rewind back 48 hours earlier from that, when it was complete euphoria and shock and everything else at the end of a game. And, you know, I'd say between the two of us, we've probably seen a couple thousand NHL games and a few hundred NHL playoff games. And I can't remember a game ever ending on a play like that. And I don't know if you can. And, you know, as a former defenseman, have you ever, you know, just basically, you know, take us through the mindset of where it's, you know, it's, that's an instinctual play by Ryan Pulock. And how do you get to the point in your career where you're like, oh, the net's open, the guy's about to score, the horn's about to sound, we're about to go to overtime and blow a 3-goal lead. I'll just get in here and stop it and not put my glove over it. And all, you know, there's about 50 elements to that thing that are just incredible that they all happen at the same time.
I think that some people are just built like that, right? If you grow up playing defense or not, and they see it's like you say, it's instinctual. It happens so quickly. And You know, before I even get into that, I will say Ryan McDonough's play was insane. I know Ryan Pulock's play was beyond and what we all want to talk about, but it was also a really nice play by McDonough to recognize that Varlamov was being very aggressive, way out of his crease. And he does that spinorama and virtually had an open net. And then Pulock comes across to save the day for the Islanders. So it was a pretty crazy sequence for a lot of reasons. But I would say that as a defenseman, I can't say that I've done it with 2 seconds on the clock or anything quite to that heroic nature, but I have snuck behind my goalie and made, you know, blocks like that. And I've also snuck behind a goalie and not made the block, right? It's gone by me. And that stinks too. When it's like, you know, they rip it top corner and you're like, oh, okay, that's actually, you know, and I've tried to save it. Your instinct is to go up and you don't have padding on your hand. So, it, you know, in some ways you're like, do I want to break my hand or do I, you know, whatever it is. But, you know, I actually remember when I was a peewee. So I don't know, middle school, we were in the state championship game and I slid behind my goalie and made a save that like pushed the puck out of the crease. And I was the only girl on a boys team. And of course the boys wouldn't say anything, but the goalie's mom pulled me aside and was like, that was, he owes you. That was huge. But none of the boys would have told me that. So, you know, I do think that there's the mindset is keep the puck out of the net, whatever you can do. And I actually liked what Ryan Pulock said, make yourself big. That's all he was trying to do. And what's really impressive about it is that he didn't get a penalty on the play because if he closes his hand around the puck in the crease, it's a penalty shot. And I still think that's a good play. I mean, that's a sure goal if he doesn't do that, no matter what. And if he closes his hand on the puck, now a Lightning player has to come down and try to score, and you've got Varlamov versus a Lightning player.
With so 1 second on the clock in a 3-2 game.
With one. Also. Right. So pressure galore, but that's still 50-50 at that point, right? Whereas if Ryan Pulock doesn't come across, it's a tied game. You're going into overtime. So, you know, I think that it's fantastic that he didn't take a penalty, and that's really impressive that he had the, you know, he kept his hands down and he just brushed the puck aside as opposed to closing his hands on it. But it's, you know, for him just coming across and blocking it. And you think about how much net there was for McDonough to look at, but he's also in a spinorama on his back end. He's not looking at the net. He thinks he's got an open net. So, you know, if you have somebody on your forehand there, that's still a lot of pressure. But again, he could pick a corner, go upstairs, and that's a lot harder for Pulock to save. And this, partly the stars aligned, and partly Pulock just made an insane play. I mean, that was, you could watch that over and over and over again. And I don't know if you've seen people on Twitter are saying Pulock for Vezina, which I think is hilarious. and so it was, you know, overall, I think in terms of the mindset, it's instinct, it's desperation, and it's just doing everything you can to keep the puck out of the net.
Yeah, it was, you know, and it obscured a little bit how well the Islanders played in that game. Now, obviously, the dominant second period to get the 3-0 lead. But even when Tampa made it 3-2, they scored 2 goals on 3 shots in the first, whatever, 6 minutes of the third period before Barry called timeout. And I wanted, you know, I had asked Barry the next day. That was the second time that Barry had called a timeout after his team kind of had a big lead whittled down. The other time was Game 5 in Boston where they were up 5-2 and the Bruins made it 5-4 and he called a timeout and he wasn't yelling. He was probably yelling to be heard because the building was loud in Boston. And I'm sure the building was still kind of buzzing at the Coliseum when Tampa made it 3-2, but just reminding his guys to be on their toes, be aggressive. You know, there was a little bit longer time left. There's, you know, 13 and change left in Game 4 against Tampa the other night when he called his timeout. But other than the Kucherov good chance with about 5.5 minutes left, and obviously the very last second chance, the Islanders really dominated that third period. And again, in the Bruins game after the timeout, they slowed things down. They were controlling the play. They were on their toes, got the forecheck back. So, you know, even when we think about the awfulness of Game 5, thinking about Game 4 when they did get a lead, like you pointed out, and they were able to even withstand it, and also we can't leave out the Pulock McDonough play because obviously that would have changed the course of the game a little bit going into overtime. But the way that they've been able to play with the lead against Tampa and keep things even in, you know, in that comfortable and an uncomfortable spot, like Barry likes to talk about, has to give you some decent feeling about this game coming up, that they can put Game 5 behind them and also remind themselves that in every other game, it's been essentially a coin flip either way.
Yeah, and I think that that's something that they can take. And again, that's why we say Game 5's an anomaly. We're done. Move on from that. Everything has been, you know, it does come down to bounces. And Barry Trotz in the past has talked about hockey gods. And, you know, you got to fight for your inches out there, work hard, and you hopefully will, get rewarded by that. And I think that that's with Barry Trotz, that's what he goes on. If they play the right way, they're going to figure it out and they're going to get their chances. And they also know what they're going up against. They know that they're a great team, but they know that the Tampa Bay Lightning, they won last year. They know what they can do, but now the Islanders have the experience to say, we can do that too. We can skate with these guys. We took them to 6 games in the Eastern Conference Final. And by the way, that first game last year, and I think we talked about this last week, maybe that 8-2 loss at the hands of the Lightning. I mean, that was a little different. They had to travel to the West Bubble and there are all these things against them. And again, that was sort of the anomaly, but there was a reason for it. There was no reason for last night's debacle other than just whatever it was, something happened. But I do think there is some confidence to take in. Everybody talks about the power that Tampa Bay has and you get Kucherov back after missing the entire regular season and everyone's complaining about the salary cap and all these different things that are going on with Tampa Bay. And you look at where the Islanders are. And other than again, if we did this podcast 24 hours ago, we would be talking like, hey, this is pretty good. They got to feel really good about themselves and take confidence in the fact that they're in a good position.
And I guess there really isn't anything to debate. We talked about Varlamov being pulled. None of those 3 goals in the first period were on him. It was that first period was, you know, even though Tampa put up 5 more on Ilya Sorokin, the first period was really the kind of the deciding fact where the Islanders got nothing done. And a bunch of bad bounces really led to the 3 goals, which usually sounds like a poor excuse afterwards. But I think if you look at those 3 first period goals, they were all, you know, one was a deflection, comes right to Stamkos in that goal in the first minute. Second one, Gord centering pass off of Andy Green and in. And then the third one, the Killorn goal, which bounced around in front of the net off of a couple different bodies before it trickled in. You know, I think a smart move by Barry to pull Varlamov. Sorokin had to kind of, you know, eat it a little bit to stay in there and withstand what you knew was going to be kind of an ugly one. But obviously, you know, it's going to be Varlamov in the deciding game. And I think we're back to the point now where it's his net and we'll see where they go with it. Right.
Yeah. And I agree with you. I mean, I don't think anybody thought that was Varlamov's fault, but it does save him a little bit. Saves the team, saves, you know, it gives them a break too. Sometimes, I mean, you look at what's going out in the West and North Division and Fleury had that gaffe and then, but then giving Leonard the start the next time. And it looks like Fleury is going to go back in net tonight from what I've seen, but sometimes it's also just a mental break, right? We talk about the physical grind on these goalies, but there's a huge mental component too. So for Varlamov, who's been amazing for them, you know, he lets up the 3, not his fault, but you know, Barry Trotz early on sees this is not going to be our night. And maybe you switch goalies and it ignites something and changes the momentum or does something. And if not, like what happened last night, then you're absolutely right. It saves Varlamov. He's going to be ready to go tomorrow night. And it's a good situation for him. And you're right. Sorokin eats it, but that's fine. He's young. He's got to figure that stuff out. And that's part of being a goalie.
And now two pigeons bemoaning the fact you can stream DirecTV satellite free.
You see this? A family watching baseball on DirecTV with no satellite dish in sight.
Let's heckle them.
You call that changing the channel?
Choke up on the remote, buddy.
I hope getting all these games on DirecTV makes up for your mother not pre-chewing your sunflower seeds.
DirecTV has the most MLB games. Visit DirecTV.com. Claim based on total games offered on national and regional sports networks with choice package or higher. Availability of RSN varies by zip code and package. High-speed internet service required. Terms and restrictions apply.
So yeah, they won't change the goalie for game 6. Do you feel like there should be any other changes? I mean, it's hard to pick out one guy who should come out of the lineup when everybody sucks like they did in game 5. But, you know, we do have Oliver Wahlstrom waiting in the wings. There was talk, you know, certainly generated by those of us in the media about after game 3 where they, you know, didn't really produce a whole lot of offense, whether Barry should put Wahlstrom in for either Travis Zajac or Leo Komarov. He didn't. They produced enough offense to win game 4. And then we have the game 5 clunker and Wahlstrom still waiting in the wings. Do you feel like it's still ride or die with the 18 that they have? Or do you want to make a change to kind of give them a little bit of a boost and give them some fresh legs for such an important game?
That's such a good question. And this is why Barry Trotz gets paid the big bucks and you and I do not. It's so interesting because I still think that you throw away last night's game. So then you stick with your lineup and Zajac has done, I thought in the early part of the series, he was playing really well. I do think that, you know, even in game 4, it was, you know, sort of interesting just to see. I thought he made some good plays early on and I actually marked him to talk about in the post-game show. And then, you know, and then there were a couple of giveaways, a couple of things that happened that it's just, it's interesting to watch that. I would love to see Wahlstrom out there, but he's been out now for some time. And does that give them a shot in the arm? Does it help them on their power play? That's where I would like to see Wahlstrom back in. I think their power play could really use his shooting and his scoring. So yes, I would like to see Wahlstrom get a chance. I don't know that Barry Trotz will do that, because I also think that he likes his guys. I don't know who I would take out, Zajac or Leo. I really don't. My gut tells me if he puts Wahlstrom in, he'll take Zajac out. But I've been wrong more times than I've been right. What do you think?
Yeah, that's, I mean, if you're going to make the change, which I agree with you, I think they should. You know, I think you've got this young guy who's fully healthy now, you would think, a few weeks out from his injury. He's a kid who seems like he's kind of unaffected by the moment. He certainly didn't seem to be affected against the Penguins very much. And I think, you know, the thing that we saw with Barry switching Kyle Palmieri and Leo Komarov for a few shifts in, you know, for the bulk of game four, and then a few shifts in game five, but that didn't, you know, they were never really in it, so it didn't really matter too much. I think you're seeing the problem now as the series goes on with Pageau's line. You know, Pageau is clearly ailing from something. He doesn't look like himself. He's not, doesn't have the same jump. He's still an important player for them. He's still going to take a bunch of draws. He's still a good checker. He's still throwing himself in the middle of every battle, but it's, you know, he's compromised, and that happens this time of year, and there's nothing you can do about it. He's not coming out of the lineup. But I think if you've got Wahlstrom with his big body and his ability to get around, I think maybe that Wahlstrom for Zajac switch, where it's either Komarov, Pageau, and Wahlstrom, and then you keep Palmieri on the top line, or put Palmieri with Pageau and Wahlstrom, and put Leo back with Barzal and Eberle. I think Wahlstrom gives you the boost that you need this time of year. And I think it's, you know, it's a big decision for Trotz, because he's not a guy who instinctively trusts his young guys. But I think the body of work that Wahlstrom's put up this year, and the trust he should be gaining, because he's been out, you know, even that Pittsburgh series before he got hurt, he was with Pageau out against Crosby's line on the road, and he didn't, you know, Trotz didn't seem to have a problem with it, and it worked well enough. I think you got to go back to trusting this kid and hoping that he gives you what you think he can give you, which, like you said, is the big shot on the power play to try to open some things up, a real shooter's mentality, because, you know, Vasilevsky has been really good this series, but has he been spectacular? No, I don't think so. I think in that game against, you know, in game four, he was leaving a few rebounds. He seemed to be affected by some of the traffic in front of him. So I think if you've got another shooter in the lineup, that's got to help you.
Yeah. And I, you know, you said something really important there in my mind, is that he doesn't seem affected by the big moment. And that's a good thing, right? For a young kid, he really seems to go to the beat of his own drummer. He just plays the same way. He's pretty consistent. And I do think that if you play him with defensively responsible people like Pageau, like Trotz has done all year, then he's done great defensively and he's worked hard at it, and Pageau's helped him and mentored him. But that's, you know, that's where the distrust comes a little bit sometimes for Trotz with some of these guys. And, you know, I do think that Vasilevsky to me is, I mean, and I said it on the broadcast when I was working the Carolina Tampa Bay series, I think he's the best goalie in the world. I really do believe that, but he hasn't been tested because he's got such a great team in front of him, first of all, and also just based on, you know, Carolina didn't test him as much as they should have. And I think the Islanders have tested him, but not as much as they should have, especially when you don't have an Anders Lee type in front of the net to create that traffic and gobble up those rebounds and with the hands that he has, right? So you put a Wahlstrom out there who can shoot, and then you throw whoever it is that can be in front of the net, whether, you know, it's a Palmieri or somebody there to just create a little havoc, a little chaos. And then I think that could be a great thing for the Islanders.
So here we are, game six tomorrow night, possibly the last game in the history of Nassau Coliseum. And we say possibly because the series might not be over, even if they win, and they could still move on. And then there's the vagaries of when UBS Arena will actually be able to open next season. So we never can count out, basically you can never count out the Coliseum. It's always, if it's still standing, there's a chance there might be an Islander game in it at some point. But, you know, and I know you weren't in the building the other night, which is a shame, because it was the best, you know, Saturday night was the best atmosphere.
It killed me to be sitting in my basement studio knowing that the atmosphere, I could tell, but it would have been amazing.
Yeah, and I ran into Shannon Hogan's parents who were there with their jerseys on, and poor Shannon and Butch are back in the studio. It was an amazing experience, you know, and I've seen that place be pretty loud over the last 20 years or so, dating back to Islanders Leafs and the Sean Bates penalty shot in 2002, when they finally got back to the playoffs for after a long absence, 2013 against a Pittsburgh team that they probably should have beaten in that series, 2015, which was the last time they closed the Coliseum when they won game six after kind of a lousy performance in Washington in game five. So there's been a lot of closings. There's been a lot of loud moments in there. I guess preemptively, even though we don't want to think about it, can you think of a time that you were in there? And I know some of those games in the last few years haven't been the most raucous, but what's your favorite recent memory of that place, just being in it?
So when I first started working a couple of years ago with the Islanders and MSG, we were the first half year, we were all at Barclays. And so the first game I was back at the Coliseum, I was like, whoa, this is way different. And my apologies to Barclays, but it was Coliseum just has a different vibe to it.
You don't have to apologize. That place sucks for hockey. Everybody knows.
Even just like the Jumbotron is off center from the rink. I mean, there are just so many things that are, it's freezing because from my understanding, the pipes are plastic, so they need to keep it cold. And anyway, there's a lot of things that just are not geared up for hockey. So the Coliseum's different. The ceiling's low. I did have an opportunity one morning. I'd left my, my iPad charger over at our little studio over there. And I had to go over the next morning, and being there in the daytime with nobody in it was very different. It was really, I was like, wow. And like the bowels of the Coliseum with nobody around, no lights on. I was like, this is a different feel. It's much more fun when there are a lot of people there, lights are on, and it's a raucous crowd. But my favorite memory, the other night when we were there, was it the clinching game not the other night, it was a while ago. Was it against Pittsburgh or was it a Bruins game? I can't even remember, but we were there. We had Ralph Macchio and his son Daniel on set with us, and Jan and I got to be up in the crowd, and it was a great atmosphere. But prior to that, I would say it was John Tavares's return. That place was insane. And I was in between the benches, and I was sharing the spot with Ray Ferraro, who's a good friend of mine, and we had our headsets on, but when we took them off at commercial breaks or to talk to each other, we couldn't hear each other. And it was so loud. I mean, people are throwing snakes on the ice. Everyone's wearing pajamas. Like, you know, we got all this stuff going on not behind the scenes, right out front, but it was so loud in there. And anytime Tavares touched the puck, anytime he got on the ice, and he had maybe just been named captain of the Leafs, and anyway, it was that was a pretty crazy energy atmosphere that night. So that's what I would say is my favorite memory from that place.
I like that. I'm going to have to go with, maybe it's recency bias, but the clincher against the Bruins, game six just last week. That felt, you know, it was a more positive environment than the Tavares game, but it had the same sort of sustained energy. It was the most, you know, it was the best game I think the Islanders have played in the playoffs. They were ahead from the start. They clearly had, you know, kind of worn down the Bruins to the point where they just couldn't do anything. And the fans knew it. And, I've been walking around and seeing some familiar faces that I've been seeing in that building for a long time that I hadn't seen for a while because of the pandemic. And just the enjoyment on the fans' faces, whether, you know, even before the game, tailgating, just to be there. You know, I'm hopeful that this is not the last game in the Coliseum. Just because, you know, the fans want this ride to continue, and the players want this ride to continue. But even if this is the end, it doesn't feel like the end, because it feels pretty special that they all the fans who have been through a lot over the years with this team got to be there for one last run. And even if it ends now, I think it's probably still got to feel as good as any playoff trip has felt in a long, long time. You mentioned Ray Ferraro. I think the last time the fans felt this way in the Coliseum was when he was scoring a million goals in the playoffs in 1993 for them. So it's you can definitely feel it in the building. The energy is really positive, which isn't always the case if you pay attention to Islanders fans online. But when they're in the building and in person, they've been a very happy bunch, which makes me happy.
That's true. And you know what? I think that there was a one of the games, and maybe it was that night that I was talking about, I can't even remember which game it was, and my apologies, but all the games blend in a little bit. But it was the parking lot scene, the tailgate, like the whole thing. I mean, obviously fans can be upset for any team when their team's not playing well. And I'm sure Islanders fans weren't happy last night. But generally speaking, that whole, the scene out there, you know, at the Coliseum has that amazing atmosphere outside. And I, you know, I stay right there at the Long Island Marriott. So I walk across and I walked a little slower and it took me a little longer because everybody was happy and cheering, playing cornhole and saying hi. And it is great. And I think that, from what I understand, and I don't know if you've taken tours of Belmont, I have not, but I've talked a lot to John Ledecky about it. And I think he and Scott Malkin have done a phenomenal job. And my understanding is they're going to do some of the stuff with the Coliseum, like the low ceilings, but it's going to be beautiful and it's going to be much more easily accessible for people from what I understand. So I hope that some of the character of the Coliseum carries over to Belmont, but it's, you know, it'll be updated. Let's say that.
Yeah. And the character part, I think, will be brought by some of these fans, like I said, that have sat through a lot of losing and a lot of crazy stuff over the time between the dynasty and now. So if they're in the new building, then it'll have some character. Yeah, that's all we got for this week. Thank you, as always, AJ. And we will be back with you next week, whether it's the beginning of the Stanley Cup Finals, the Islanders' first trip there in 37 years, or we're wrapping up a pretty successful season, even though it may not feel that way once it's done. We'll be back with you for at least one more and a few more after that. So I hope, AJ, you'll be back and we'll be talking again soon.
I hope so. And let's hope we have a couple more weeks.
And yes, we will be back with you. So again, thanks as always for listening. If you want to subscribe to The Athletic, you may do so at theathletic.com/nosleeptillbelmont to get the latest deal. Game 6 tomorrow. We'll see what comes. Thanks again for listening. Take care.